Now. And we are recording. Okay, here we go. Hello and welcome back to another episode of You Don't Look Autistic. My name is Clara. I'm the host, technically, I guess is what you call it. For anyone who hasn't listened before, this podcast is basically just chatting about mental health, mental health, which includes mental illnesses or physical disabilities as well. And it's just super, I never know how to intro these things. It's super straightforward, just chatting about how to navigate life when you have certain challenges that can be stigmatized and misunderstood and hard to understand yourself. So we're just chatting about it to get the word out there and get some understanding a bit more. That's a good enough intro. I am autistic, right? that would make sense to anyone who's listening. That's why it's called You Don't Look Autistic, obviously. I have autism. I was diagnosed when I was 20. It's been a crazy road, and yeah, so I like to talk about that, and I like to talk to other people about their experiences with various other disabilities, illnesses, whatever you want to call them. So yeah, let's just get started because intros are awkward. So yes, my guest today is Janine. Hello, Janine.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on here today. For some background to anyone listening, Janine, I met you in my first year of college out of high school at Sheridan.
Yes.
Performing Sheridan. Arts prep. Yeah.
Yeah, the weirdest one-year program of anyone's lives ever.
Honestly, I can wholeheartedly and confidently agree with that, and I don't even feel bad saying it.
Yeah, I hope, I just want to say that Sheridan is not a bad school. Oh. However, I will probably talk some shit about it. Just because.
You have every right to.
Don't sue me, Sheridan. Yeah, just don't sue me. Okay, Sheridan, don't sue me. You're a great college. I just didn't have a great time. That's all.
Fair enough. I am in the boat with you. And there was a lot of factors that were so unique to that year that mm-hmm. affected the program and the school year so much that even if the school was like forcefully being crappy for some reason, that wouldn't have always been the case for our experience. Like, if we had the 5-week faculty strike, we had a weird 1-year program with 70 kids. Yeah.
Were you in the dorms? Did you live in the dorms?
I was. Okay. This was the weirdest thing though. I was in the dorms. The entire program of people in the dorms were in residence 2. And it was just me and one other girl who were in residence 1 with the
in residence
1, and everyone else was like partying in residence 2, and I'd be like, hi guys.
And then I was also in residence 2, like with a pillow over my head, like, everyone shut up, please leave me alone.
Honestly, I feel like that's just such a like classic university college experience though, where they're just like, come to this place, hang out here, and you got there and you're like, this sucks.
It was just such a weird time, just not my vibe. Like, theater kids are just so much too much for me, and it just it's just a fever dream the whole time.
Oh yeah, and that's the funniest thing I would say to anyone who has no clue what to do after high school and wants to have a crazy experience: join a theater program.
Oof, what a good advice. That's very good advice. Because you will have experiences.
It's whether like you like reenacting them or not. High School Musical on drugs or something. Like, that's the experience. And I've only seen some of High School Musical, and I feel like that's an accurate statement. Anyway, so Janine, how old are you now, and what are you up to? Because it was 3 years ago that we were sharing.
Oh my gosh, that was 3 years ago. So I'm 23 now, and I live just outside of Vancouver, British Columbia. And I now work in a customer service job for a third-party fulfillment company, which sounds very like official and adulty. But I was originally a chef in Vancouver, but I lost my job because of COVID in March, almost a year ago now. And yeah, so I was lucky to pick up this job, and I'm just right now thankful to have a job with COVID and whatnot. So right now, no complaints. Life is good, all things considered.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that, and that that has been your experience as of now. I know everyone's saying this. I don't want to just like shout into that echo canyon, but it's been a really crazy time. And
hell yeah, sister.
And I don't like to be someone who just says like fake niceties and stuff. So coming on and being like, well, you know, COVID sucks, but it's okay, and I'm doing fine. Like, you know, that's not true for most people. So I'm glad that you can actually honestly say that you're doing all right. That's really good.
Thank you. Honestly, yeah, I'm pretty happy about it too. At the start of COVID, it was really rough. I had like a complete psychotic break at the beginning of it. Like, it was pretty bad, but honestly, it's just been on the up since there. It was like not complete rock bottom, but it was just, you know, just a total shift. But the whole world was going through a shift. So I think now we at least know how to manage this shift because we've been in it for so long. So I'm just, you know, I'm thankful to have a roof over my head and a stable job, which is so much more than a lot of people right now. And yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Mm-hmm. No, I feel you. And yeah. And I think this year, especially because you mentioned, you know, like having a breakdown for a moment, I think everyone had some sort of breakdown.
Exactly.
Or shut down, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know I'm not alone in this too, which is also so helpful. You know, whatever I'm going through, there's thousands of people going through thousands of things that could be very similar to me or very different to me. So I don't know. It's comforting in a way that
we
can all feel each other's pain in some dark way.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. And I think that's definitely an interesting perspective to have on the whole situation too, because, you know, if you're someone who has gone through a particularly difficult time for whatever reason, it can be extremely alienating. And then right now, at least you can be like, well, at least it's happening to the whole world.
Yeah,
it's not totally just me. And you can kind of have that in common with the idea of whatever the world is to you. You know, it's not just be like, it's just happening to me and everyone's so hard on me and no one understands, you know, exactly. Which can be really easy to do. So Janine, I wanted to chat with you today because you have experienced dealing with an eating disorder for I don't know how long, but you've had to deal with that in your life. And that was something that was prominent in your life when I first met you back in 2017 and 2018. And I'll be super honest, I had no idea that you were struggling at all when I knew you. I knew we didn't see each other like 24/7. So maybe if I had been hanging out with you more often, maybe I would have picked up on something. But yeah, I had no clue at all. So yeah, do you want to talk about what that's been like, living with an eating disorder has been like for you specifically, and
sure,
where you're at now, if you want?
Yeah, so I guess we can start at the beginning. I was diagnosed in 2015 with anorexia nervosa, restriction type is what it's officially called. And so that was my last year of high school. My theater teacher was spending a lot of time with me, you know, we're doing after school projects, whatever, and had noticed like my behavior shift. And so she took me to a counselor like in the school that just happened to specialize in eating disorders and basically sat me down and diagnosed me, like asked me a few questions and said, sorry, sister, sounds like you've got anorexia. And I was like, that's not how it goes, but that's how it went.
Yeah.
I just remember the first thing like thinking was like, no, like, are you stupid? No. I had like all these like stereotypes in my head of what like having an eating disorder meant, specifically anorexia, and like that just wasn't what I was doing in my head. And but I do remember that day. I remember that day very clearly. For the first time, I heard this like voice in my head saying, well, now we have to stop what we're doing. And I was like, what? Whoa, whoa, what? And I realized like that's when like there was something else in my brain that had control and was in charge of my actions, because I was restricting my food. I was losing weight and working out a lot. And I thought, I didn't necessarily think what I was doing was unhealthy, because I was getting the results I wanted. You know, I thought what I was doing was a good thing. Yeah, I wasn't educated enough to know how harmful I was being to my body. Because, you know, when you're in high school, you just want to be pretty or whatever. So it just felt like I was doing the right thing. And so it was very upsetting to hear that I was, you know, actually mentally ill out of all this. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. Yeah. No, I can definitely recognize the initial, like, what are you talking about kind of reaction. I remember, because when I first had autism brought up to me, it was just in a therapy session. And I'd been going to therapy for a couple months at that point. And my therapist was just like, have you ever considered autism before? And I was just like, what? Like, why is it? It's like, it'd just be like someone bringing up like, you know, maybe you're colorblind or something, you know, like just something so random. It's like, not to diss colorblind people, I'm sure it's a struggle. I asked my first thought, I was like, okay, sure, we're going to go through this because like maybe it's a stepping stone that everyone has to do or something like that, you know? And then after, you know, even a couple days after that, I was like, oh my God, I had no idea these sort of patterns that were happening in my life could actually mean something, you know?
Totally, yeah. And yeah, like you said, like you didn't even see me struggling. So that's totally normal. Because even when I was diagnosed, I didn't even know I was struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so easy to hide from other people and even yourself too, mm-hmm. until it's like way too late. So I think like that's a huge thing with eating disorders too, is like they hide in the shadows of everyone, including the person that's has it. It's just such a, I don't know where I'm going with this, I guess.
No, I get what you mean. I get what you mean, where it's like, it's not as prominent as you'd think it would be. Like, I feel like to my literal mind, it would seem like, good morning, I am not going to have breakfast because I don't want to gain weight, et cetera, whatever reason it could be. Therefore, I'm not eating breakfast. I know eating breakfast is a good idea, but I'm not going to do it. And you're like that, like you could think it'd be like very like, you know, literal destructive thinking, but there's so many ways of hiding that and coming up with the reasons why it's okay. And that you're actually doing, it's usually okay, but I'm doing it and that's okay for me to do it because I'm special or something, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, no, that was great. Something when I first started going to therapy, like my last few months of high school, was like, I would use the term like my logic brain and my eating disorder brain. Cause like I knew the behaviors I was doing was stupid. Like they weren't healthy. Cause I also got a lot, once I got diagnosed, I got a lot worse too. Cause then the eating disorder started to panic within me and like mm-hmm. had to take more control so that it wouldn't get rid of it. So I would say like, I know what I'm doing is crazy. Like this is stupid. It's not healthy. It's not good. But my eating disorder brain is like saying all these other stuff. Cause I feel like there's this misconception where people with eating disorders, like, think that they're right in what they're doing, or like think that they're like, this is okay, it's fine, it's normal. Like most of the time I want to speak for people that already have like gone through the motions, like been diagnosed for like, have been dealing with it for a long time, like relapses I guess more so. Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah, I never realized it, but the first time I was diagnosed was just so much different than my relapse, like my thought processes and whatnot. Like when I relapsed, which was in college when we met, like I knew everything I was doing was the eating disorder and it was a conscious choice, but I mm-hmm. know it was insane. I know it was insane and I was still choosing the eating disorder because I was going through stuff.
But, oh, absolutely. No, and I'm sure a lot of people could probably recognize that within a lot of different disabilities and disorders and stuff, that, you know, there is a certain comfort within it all. So even though it's like, I know this is hurting me, but right now the alternative or whatever I'm trying to avoid is going to be worse in my mind at this moment. And also I imagine that if you're lacking nutrition in your body, your mind isn't capable of actually rationalizing your thought process correctly.
Totally. Yeah. It comes easier and easier to choose the addiction. And mm-hmm. that's something I also wanted to bring up, is like an eating disorder is so much like an addiction to drugs or alcohol or anything else. It's kind of, for me, sometimes it's kind of easier to think about it that way. Like it's like an addict's mind, like an addict, like way of thinking. Where is it going to go with that?
That makes sense to me though. Like it's like a temporary fix for something that's scary to you in that moment. And then you just keep doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like it's just, it's always masking the bigger thing. Like eating disorders are just coping mechanisms for a bigger thing or other mental illness, just like an addiction to drugs or alcohol is running away from the bigger mental illness, whether that's anxiety, depression, trauma, PTSD, you know, all of mm-hmm. that.
Absolutely. And I think that's becoming a little more understood now than maybe it was when you first heard about it when you were in grade 12 or mm-hmm. beforehand. Just before we keep going too far, could you give like a general definition of what you would say anorexia nervosa is? Mm-hmm. In case anyone was a little unclear.
Yeah, so I guess the most textbook definition is someone that restricts or deprives themselves of food or nutrients willingly. There are other eating disorders. Well, specifically within anorexia, there's also like other little things sprinkled in there, like an addiction to exercise, or there's also like a binging restricting type. And then there's bulimia, which is a different eating disorder where I can't speak to it fully, but it's more so where you're focused on purging. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that sometimes people get confused between the two. And sometimes they overlap. So some people don't fit into one box of the eating disorder. Sometimes they go through phases. But for me, I've stayed pretty steady, I guess you could say, on the restricting type, and also with an addiction to exercise. I was also diagnosed with. That played a huge part in my behaviors, as they're called, as well.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense to me, and I can recognize that a bit in just from various media sources and stuff that I've heard about eating disorders. Like I've heard of bulimia, which mm-hmm. my understanding was like vomiting on purpose or forms yeah. of that essentially. And then I've heard of anorexia, where it's just you don't eat anything on purpose too. So yeah, that makes sense to me, just to have that out there now. So we're all on the same page kind of thing. And also, I'm sure there's tons of people who've never heard of it before too.
Actually, there's something I really love to bring up that
yeah, I found
fascinating. Mm-hmm. When I was being treated, so when I had to move back to Red Deer, when I dropped out of college, back to Red Deer with my family, to pursue treatment and go into rehab, I was assessed by one of the like mental health workers that then kind of direct you into the bigger mental health network of where to go. And so when she was assessing me, I was like, yes, I have anorexia. And then she was like, okay, so how long do you starve for? And I was like, that's not really what I do. And she's like, what? And I said, like, I have a specific amount of calories I eat in a day. But I do eat every day. Just very specific things, specific amounts at specific times. And she was so confused by it, like a mental health professional who I assumed would understand this. But it like baffled her, like that, because in her mind, anorexia was just the not eating, whereas I ate all the time every day, but it was the amount was the problem. And that's just like a little misconception I just wanted to clear up that I think often gets missed too. Yeah.
No, that's, I think that's a really important point. And also a really, like, I think valid point too, in that of course, you know, it's a really complicated thing to have. And then, you know, I assume no two people with the same disorder experience it the same way or tackle it the same way. And it's interesting that, like, as you said, like, if you're a healthcare worker, wouldn't you know this? Because I've heard from a lot of different people with different challenges and stuff who've gone to seek help, and the people who are supposed to be able to help don't know. And I especially at this time do not want to bash healthcare workers whatsoever, but I had that experience too, or just like trying to go into the process of getting my diagnosis, and I had doctors be like, are you sure you're autistic? Like, you know, like, are you sure you're not just awkward or something like that? Or I've been told, like, because I had one night when I was actually also at Sheridan, and I think this is probably was just to do with the environment we were all in, was just so stressful that I took myself to the hospital one night just because I was just stressing myself out. I was just going into a really bad like thought spiral, and I was like, I don't know what's happening, but I can't be in my little dorm room by myself anymore. So I took myself to emerge, and I had a doctor there be like, you do really well for an autistic person. And I'm just like, I'm in the hospital right now. What does this mean?
And I'm just like a backhanded compliment.
Yeah. And I'm like, compared to what? Like, yeah. I'm so confused right now. And I'd be like, thank you, I think. So it's interesting, just obviously the crazy amount of stuff that is required for doctors to know. And it's not possible to know everything.
Of course.
But just when you come across someone who's just supposed to help you and doesn't know, you're just like, okay, did I make this up? I'm confused.
Yeah. Then you feel like you're crazy, which is already a thought going through your head. Well, yeah. I am crazy.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting to me whenever I hear, I hear that more and more as I talk to people, that they've experienced stuff like that and had strange comments and things. But one of the things I always remember too is when I was getting my official diagnosis in Toronto, I had to go to Toronto and do a certain number of like tests and interview things. The one doctor who was assessing me the most was like, so the thing about autism is nobody knows what it is. And I was just like, fair kind of thing.
Well, that's helpful.
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? That's probably true at this point. So yeah. Anyways, that was a little spiel of my life. We're gonna focus on you, I promise.
Well, that's so fascinating. Like, I don't know much about autism myself, and like, you're the first person I've known closely and has been this open about it, I guess I could say. So I'm so fascinated learning about it, and I've loved listening to this podcast too, because I've learned so much.
Well, thank you.
A little side note.
Thank you. That is the goal, honestly. Yeah, that's the goal. Just because when I first was exploring my diagnosis and stuff, I found the most useful information was just hearing people chat about it, their experiences, as opposed to like trying to read scientific doctor essays about some test that was done 20 years ago or something like that, you know.
Totally.
I was like, that's not helpful to me. I just need to hear how people live their life with this kind of thing. So that's the goal. So thank you so much for saying that, though. I do really appreciate it. Jumping back into our other conversation really quick. when you say you were doing like certain like patterns and certain things, can you tell me what those were, or just generalize them? Like, I know you said eating at certain times, only making sure you had a certain amount of calories and stuff. Was there other things you do as well, or is that mostly it?
I don't want to get too specific, because I don't, like, my biggest fear is when I talk about it that I give people ideas that might be on like the cusp of developing the disorder or something like that. I never want to give inspiration, I guess. So
that's really fair. And I totally respect that.
So like I did work out a lot, just trying to, you know, and like I would weigh myself obsessively. Like every single morning I would like write down, like I had a calendar where I'd write down my weights, how much I ate. Like it was an absolute obsession. Like my whole days and nights were consumed with thinking about the best way I could do this and the most, like the basically like the quickest way I could destroy myself, honestly, which is insane. It's insane. I know it's insane. I can't stop saying that just because me saying it out loud sounds psychopathic, but I don't even know if that's a word. But I'd drink crazy amounts of coffee and tea just to try to keep me full or suppress my appetite. I would take caffeine pills to try to keep me awake. God, just like terrible. I was doing terrible things to my body. That's like the biggest thing I can think of. And I would purposely eat around people. Like I would plan, since it's scheduled, like Sharon and everything was like scheduled, I would make sure to like have those feeding times, as I called them, which is weird, like around people, so that they, you know, even if they noticed I had lost weight, they'd be like, oh, well, she's still eating.
Yeah, you had like an alibi, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Such addict behavior. Like, mm-hmm. just secrecy and manipulativeness. All that was my life for like a year, and it like was my one comfort because I didn't have to worry about anything else. I didn't have to try to do anything but this, you know, if I could get this one thing right, I'll be okay, kind of thing is what it turned into.
And I think that's just guessing here, but that's probably the like basis of a lot of people's challenges. It's just like, if I can just manage this little aspect that seems little to you, then everything else will seem smaller too, kind of thing.
And totally,
unfortunately, it doesn't work that way.
Of course not. Like part of eating disorders too are like making yourself smaller too. Like like I was such like an anxious child growing up, and like I, you know, I always felt kind of wrong or like out of place, and so I can see where I developed this as a kind of way to take control, to kind of make myself smaller and, you know, not take up as much space, you know, be as bold or have a big personality, because I straight up took my personality away. I also just want to note that like when you deprive yourself of nutrients, your body and brain think it's dying, so your brain produces these crazy chemicals to ease the process of dying, and they are extremely addictive. It just has like similar chemical properties of what you can find in certain drugs like crystal meth or even heroin. And that's also the appeal, a huge appeal of people with eating disorders too, that is so similar to like an addict of a drug, of drugs or alcohol. It does become like, even after, you know, you're like, okay, I want to get better, I want to recover, it becomes so hard to stop because your body is like dependent on it.
So after you received your diagnosis, did you graduate high school and then go to Sheridan right away? Or did you have a gap year between that?
I had a gap year. So I finished high school in the summer, and then I moved to Southern Alberta. I took like a gap semester off, I guess. I started school in January. I did one semester of university and then I dropped out. It just like wasn't feeling it. I'm not like a school person, but I guess I was just like feeling like I needed to pick something, and I did, and then regretted it. And happy I didn't stick with it just to stick with it though. And so at that time, I was doing on paper really great with my eating disorder. Like I was, you know, I was at a good weight. I wasn't, you know, restricting my food, but I was still like obsessively at the gym. I was still like not obsessively counting my calories, but just like making sure the foods I ate were like fit and good for you and healthy, you know. So like on paper I was super healthy, but that was still like some symptom swapped eating disorder kind of behaviors, like without me realizing it too. I had no clue. I thought I was cured. Because I guess my life just kind of moved on. You know, you move out of high school, you know, I had a boyfriend, like my life just kind of moved on. So I wanted to just be healthy. And so it looked great on paper, but I was just symptom swapping. And I didn't know that until I moved to Sheridan in 2017. Was it 2017?
Yeah. This is so long ago.
I know. Yeah.
No, I think that's a really interesting point that you bring up too, of symptom swapping, because it's interesting. I think like it doesn't necessarily completely relate to autism, because there's a number, I don't know, I can't explain it exactly in that way, but the idea that, you know, just it's like, well, I'll stop doing this part of it, but I'll put this part here instead, you know? And I think totally. That's a really, as you said, and as you were saying before, you know, kind of like addictive behavior, like OCD, like obsessive mm-hmm. behavior. And I think that's probably like a really valid point that I think a lot of people maybe don't think would continue after you get your magical diagnosis, you know, like I think there's that aspect of like, oh, well, I'm cured now. I have a name for it. I'm all better. I won't do that anymore. And that's just not how it works. So,
And it's super easy for eating disorders to live in plain sight too, because we live in such a disordered eating culture, not eating mm-hmm. disorder culture, but disordered eating culture. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, with all these diets and, you know, super health movement and whatnot, like they have good intentions, but you know, it's the root of it is like, you're not perfect. You have to change. You have to be healthier than this person. And like, you have to be this to be great or whatever. And, you know, it's people aren't happy with just doing what they feel like doing with their body, you know, without some guilt involved. You know, like if I want to sit on the couch and eat chocolate all day, I can have a day of doing that and still be healthy, you know, but like society would say that I'm lazy and unhealthy and whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
I think you're totally correct in that. And I think that's a really huge like misinformation too, where it's like, it is really advertised. That's like, oh, if you have a pop today, you know, that's you're basically, you know, giving yourself a heart attack in 2 seconds kind of thing, or something exactly, like that, yeah. You know, it's like totally. you could eat like crap for like a week and your body will survive. You probably won't feel amazing in the moment, but like you will be okay.
Yeah, overall you could still be a healthy person, you know. Maybe you just needed that for your mental health, just to have a week of being a garbage fire, and like that's good for you. Mm-hmm. It can be good for you. You know, it doesn't help that we're pushing this narrative of go to the gym, be healthy, juice cleanse, all that garbage. Like that is healthy. That is disordered.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like another way where so many people don't even realize that they might have eating disorder tendencies, or they don't have a healthy relationship with food or their body. It's so common nowadays. It's so hard to find the line of what's the addiction and what's healthy sometimes.
I think that's really important too. And it's I think it's really like, yeah, really important to mention that. I think, you know, we can also, you know, jump in if we want to I'm for certain that men experience eating disorders, but I feel, you know, it's very commonly projected on women because of the societal expectations of feminine beauty and all that. And I don't really know where I was going with that. I just lost my train of thought. Woohoo!
Well, totally. Like, it can but happen to anyone. And, like, my, actually, my ex-boyfriend who I was with when I was, like, recovered, like, he struggled with an eating disorder in high school, too. That's, like, kind of how we bonded. But it was, like, fascinating. He's the only, like, man I've ever known to have an eating disorder. And even though we both experienced it, it was so vastly different. That even sometimes we couldn't even like relate to each other, but yet it was so like fascinating because like we're experiencing the same diagnosis yet we're on two completely different planes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, it's so hard for men to realize that in themselves too, because it's never talked about really in my experience, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know that's probably like a whole thing to unpack and we won't jump too far into it today because we'd be here forever kind of thing. But yeah, I just, you know, talking about this makes me like remember like when I was in high school and all the crazy stuff, mainly girls, because I mostly hung out with girls, would talk about, you know, their healthy snack options they came up with and what sort of plan they were following from someone who's not a doctor, like some influencer on YouTube or something, you know, stuff like that. And I don't blame them either. It wasn't because they weren't smart kids or anything. It's just, there's this inherent pressure as a young person to fit this mold, which I know we all talk about. And yes, we're all told to be unique. So it's very ironic. I totally remember, like, I did not like my body when I was in high school. Even when I left high school, I was like, I wish I was thinner. I wish I was different in so many different ways. And I never took it to changing the way I ate. And I think that's mainly because I've always struggled with, because of sensory issues of what food I am willing to eat, which is a whole other can of worms. But, so I wouldn't consider not eating, but I would beat myself up mentally for having too much sugar or eating too much of the same thing. And, but you know, then there's the whole, but I was like, well, I can't eat anything else. There's something else I like to eat kind of thing.
Well, and exactly.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think it's something like literally everyone has to deal with, unless they're just someone who just likes every kind of food, which I have met people like that. And I'm immensely jealous.
Yeah, I think that's, oh shit, I forgot what I was going to say. You said something that really inspired me. Now I forget.
Diet. I was inspired for a minute.
It was about you didn't take it upon yourself to eat differently, but yet you like still felt all that guilt and shame like about yourself. Just like for no apparent reason, but so that's like super dangerous, not you specifically, but like just that it becomes super dangerous when, you know, someone with an eating disorder like me comes along and, you know, I'm doing all these behaviors and I'm low-key praised for it by other people because I'm doing all the diets that they wish they could do. You know, like, I'm like, look at me, I'm sugar-free, salt-free, calorie-free, whatever. Like, and they're like, oh my gosh, you're so healthy. Like, obviously, before it gets too extreme, and people see the extreme part, it comes across as like, oh wow, so healthy, so fit, how does she do it? And like, that's something that like, my little perfectionist brain thrived on too, is like, I'm doing something you can't, which is insane. And terrible, like horrible that I ever thought that way, but the eating disorder thrives on that.
Well, that makes sense too, you know, and there is a certain egotistical value you have within it, you know.
Totally.
Which ego. Which totally makes sense. And I don't think that points to any sort of negative traits you have anyways or something like that. Like I think that would, yeah, like I think that makes sense. Like and I know other people who've had eating disorders, and I can recognize those kind of patterns and stuff. And then I have friends who are just very naturally very thin people.
Of course.
And they've been kind of, I don't want to say accused because it doesn't sound very nice, but, you know, been like, people have been like, hey, do you eat? And they're like, oh my God, yes, I eat, kind of thing. Or they're just like praised for something and they're just like, well, you know, I'm not, that's not a compliment. Like, I don't feel good in XYZ parts of my life. I just happen to have a high metabolism and I'm tall and thin. Doesn't make you happy, kind of thing, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Well, and even like, yeah, with an eating disorder, when I was tall and skinny, I still wasn't happy. You know, I'm never going to be happy when I'm doing these behaviors, because no matter what I get to, I always want to go further. I want to go further. Like, there's no just like stopping point of an eating disorder. We're like, well, I'm the weight I wanted. And now everything's great. And now I'm just going to live this life forever and I'm happy and whatever. Like, that's never going to happen. Like, as soon as you hit that goal weight or whatever, your brain just wants more. Like, well, how far can we go? How extreme can we get? You know, but your body type has nothing to do with your happiness ever. Never will.
Oh, yeah.
Eating disorder or not.
Yeah, and I really wish I think it is much more promoted now and talked about.
Totally.
And it's no one's fault at all for not realizing that, because, you know, we're brought up in the sense of, she was so young and beautiful and perfect, everyone wanted her. And you're like, mm-hmm. how do I know if I fit that kind of thing, you know? So
yes.
Definitely, I won't blame anyone for falling into that trap, essentially, what it is. Yeah, okay, we'll wrap up soon because I don't want to keep you too long, and I know we've been talking for a while already.
Well, time flies when you're having fun.
I know, right? Honestly, like, I could like probably record for like 2 hours with most people and I'd be like, that's too much time. <It's> like, I can't ask people to sit down and listen, commit that much time yet. So really quick, what would you say is something that was just one of the most helpful, useful things to, as you said, like, you know, you're not going to get cured necessarily. It's probably going to be something that's always going to be around in your life. Mm-hmm. What do you think is something that was just like, you felt that allowed you to want to get better more, or to encourage you to get better more?
Well, it's kind of ironic, like, hitting rock bottom was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Well, actually, a lot of people say that, but when I had to drop out of Sheridan, move back across the country to Alberta to go to rehab, my boyfriend broke up with me. I, like, the month I moved back. Yeah, rude, but... but honestly, I couldn't even like process it. I was so like far gone at that point. So all I had to do, so I was, you know, back at square one, living at my mom's house. Just like I was when I got out of high school, you know, it's like I was restarting my life all over again, and I had nothing to do but get better. And that was kind of the best thing that could ever happen. 'Cause, you know, I felt like I had a new shot at life. I could do whatever I wanted. You know, I wasn't tied to anyone or anything. I got to restart. And so, weirdly enough, like, rehab was the best ever. I had so much fun, which is not something a lot of people say. But I had such a great time in treatment, just learning how to regrow a human being, which is what I did from scratch. I completely weight restored. And then I immediately moved to Vancouver a week after rehab, which is insane. And I don't really advise that, because maybe that wasn't the best decision looking back. But for that moment, it was the best thing for me. You know, I was just so ready to start living again and live however I wanted to. And does that answer your question? I don't remember.
That does answer my question. No, I think that's a really important point to make too, that even if you find yourself at what you would consider a rock bottom or just feeling like complete crap, doesn't mean that you've lost any chance to start working on getting better.
Yeah, that's it. It's never too late to completely restart. And sometimes the start line is the most exciting line.
I think that's a really important point too. And honestly, I don't even though I haven't had an experience that had to, that was extreme enough to require me to go to rehab or join a program of some kind, not so that you should feel bad if that is where you go, if you go, awesome. I think that just wanting to get better is all you need. Cause like I wouldn't have received my diagnosis for autism or any of the other illnesses that I've experienced if I hadn't, you know, been like, you know what, I don't know what's going on. I have 1,000 great things in my life that I could say don't, are a reason for me not to require the help that I feel like I need right now. But just starting somewhere and saying like, hey, I don't know what's happening. I don't know why I don't feel this great, but I don't feel great. And that's no, that's a perfect place to start. And that's a good enough place to start, because I think there's a little bit of a expectation that you have to have some extreme traumatic thing to deserve help kind of thing.
And totally. Oh my gosh. True. Yeah. Yes. That's a huge part of like the eating disorder too, is that like, I never felt sick enough to like need treatment or to ask for help. Like, you know, I'm not sick enough, you know, like other people need it more. I'll just be draining the healthcare system. Like, but like, yeah, like you are worth it. Like, that's so cheesy.
Yeah. Well, enough is no word included in this situation ever.
Yeah.
Let's just put it like that.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, Janine, I will let you go shortly, as I said before. First of all, thank you so much for having this chat. I know it's a tricky conversation at times. It's a scary conversation to have, and I think you speak really well on it. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much for asking me to be here. It was a pleasure, really.
Yeah, I'm so glad we got to catch up again. It's been a while, and yeah, one of the things with that whole Sheridan theater experience that was such a roller coaster was like, you know, it's not necessary to also lose every single connection from it just because people go on with their lives and stuff like that. And you know, it was crazy, totally. But I'm glad I got to meet the people I met. So
yeah, I agree. What little things I do remember, I'm glad I got to hang on to them. And you're one of those things. So thank you.
Thank you so much. My last question is always off topic and is just a selfish question of mine because I like to ask it, which is, do you have a favorite, favorite in the most general term, film or television show or book that you have recently watched or watched in your lifetime that you just like? And I want to know.
Ooh, okay. So I'm going to say my favorite TV show is Parks and Recreation. Have you seen it?
No.
That's okay.
Yeah, my little sister loves it. She's been talking to me about it a lot. So good. I have heard of
just
it.
It was just added to Netflix like 2 days ago or something. It was on Amazon Prime before, and that's how I watched it. But oh my gosh, it's just amazing in every sense of the word. Season one's a little dull, but they're all like that. Till they get their footing. It's incredible. My boyfriend and I just finished our third time watching it, I think. And like hungover almost after we finished it. Like, we're so sad. Like, we just want to watch it again. It's so good.
I love that. It's the best when you can watch something over and over again and just be like, this is just perfection to me. Kind of thing, yeah. You know? It's amazing. The best. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I will put that to the top of my list then of shows I need to include in my life, because I've just been rewatching Killing Eve over and over and over again.
Killing Eve, I've never seen that.
It's so good. It's on Crave, I believe.
Oh damn, it's the one I don't have.
I know, that's the thing. I'm gonna be honest, I have a friend who gave me the episodes, so I didn't pay for them. So I'm sure you can find it on other platforms of some kind. I don't really know how it all works, but anyways, as I was saying, I probably watched, there's only three seasons, they're not very long. I think I've watched them all like four times now, and I'm so down for a fifth time, but I think I can include a bit more variety. So I will look into Parks and Rec.
Do you have Prime? I'm sorry, I just
said one more thing. Yes, my family has it, so yes.
Have you seen The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
No, but my family has been telling me to watch that, and I honestly want to. I'll have to let you know when I watch these things.
Please do. Mine and my boyfriend's dad's both recommended this to us separately. Like, weird.
So cute. Oh, it's so cute.
But, like, it's not even a show I would expect them specifically to like, but, like, it just touches everyone. Like, no matter who the audience is, it's such a good show. It's so well done. It's the writing's amazing. The costumes are amazing. Just the film is incredible. Oh, my gosh. You'd love it. You would love it.
Oh, thank you so much. I'll just have to start watching some TV right after this. Forget homework. yes, I will let you know when I see those then, because you've given me raving reviews. So I trust that it's a good show. well, thank you so much, Janine. It's been a pleasure. And if I have any more questions that I think of, I'll just have to have you back.
Please do. I'm around. I don't do anything. It's COVID. I can't leave honestly.
I feel you there. Well, thank you so much and have a great night.
Thank you. You too, Clara. Take care.
Take care.